5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in radio at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And with the start of the college football season, it is rapidly approaching. It is time now for us to head to Lincoln, Nebraska, and visit with our weekly NFL, our college football analyst. And that is the double nickel, number 55, Jason Peter, who I know is not going to hold back with his opinions on the one and only Johnny Manziel, especially after that obscene gesture on Monday Night Football. How are you, Jason Michael?
Oh, I'm better than Johnny, that's for sure. I mean, not what you want to do in one of your first preseason football games. I mean, he's kind of opened Pandora's box here. As a defensive player, you kind of know that, number one, I mean, you knew that he was a hothead, right? But now you know that you can kind of get inside him and get under that skin pretty easy, because, you know, I heard Brian Arakpo do an interview, and obviously you're not going to get the whole truth, but he was saying, look, like, you know, we weren't even really doing anything that bad. And he kind of lost his cool. He lost his composure. You can't do that as a quarterback in the NFL, let alone a rookie quarterback. I know the game has changed, and, you know, a lot more, I think, is asked of these quarterbacks in terms of running the football. And so maybe, you know, they don't have to. No, let me take that back. Your mind has to be locked in all the time when you're a quarterback. Now, you'll see some of the, you know, the Tom Brady's and the Peyton Manning's and the Brett Favre's. I mean, they'll get into it with defensive guys, and that's just a little, you know, jibber-jabber back and forth after the defensive player brings them down a little late or gives them a little shot, and, you know, the quarterback's letting them know that's not going to fly. But, you know, Manziel, I mean, you know, this is pretty much just walking away from the bench or running away from the bench, and you're going to flip the bird. I just think you're asking for it, because guys, once they get in the regular season and now you're playing for real money, mm-hmm. You know, guys do their homework. You know, I don't know if everybody knows that, but you know about, you know, a girlfriend or two, you know, from a player's past that maybe happened to spend a night or two with one of your teammates. And I mean, you know, there's stuff that there's really not a lot that's kind of off limits. You know, I don't know if I've ever heard anybody get on somebody about maybe a child of theirs. That may be the only thing, but I mean, I've heard about, you know, mothers and sisters and wives and girlfriends and you name it. So he's going to get it all this year.
Our NFL, our college football analyst joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We would love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports as we go one-on-one with Jason Peter. And of course, you know, I kind of got into this a little bit last week and reminded the listeners, I mean, you were a first-round draft pick with the Carolina Panthers back in, what, 96, three-time national champion at Nebraska. I just have to wonder, I mean, if Johnny Manziel, if he was your teammate, I mean, how would you view him? Or perhaps what would you say to him?
Well, as a defensive player, you probably wouldn't say much. I mean, you kind of spend most of your time with the guys that are on your side of the football. So, you know, but if there's, obviously there's veterans in that locker room on the offensive side, you know, there's somebody, and I'm sure they've already spoken to Manziel. I'm sure the coaching staff has spoken to him. I'm sure the owner and maybe even has spoken to him, basically saying you can't do that. You can't lose your cool. This is what they want you to do. And it's just kind of, you know, it's day one stuff. I mean, I remember this stuff, you know, back in high school. You know, you do whatever you can to get your player, the guy that you're lining up against, out of his kind of game, you know, phase sort of mind. You just get him wanting to break away from the game plan, and his only you know, motive out there is to try to embarrass you. Well, if that's what that guy is thinking and that's what he's trying to do, then, you know, that's these offenses and defense, they operate, you know, there's 11 guys out there and they're all kind of, you know, linked together. And when one link breaks, you know, the whole thing kind of falls apart. And that's, you know, on both sides of the ball, let alone when you're the quarterback, because You're handling the ball every single play. And you're the guy who's in the huddle telling everybody else to stay calm and stay cool because you're just going to take this ball and you're going to go 80. When that guy is losing his cool, it's not good for the whole team.
Okay, so the Browns, they got it right by naming Brian Hoyer as the starter. Are you in agreement with that?
Absolutely. It was. I just think it works into everybody's favor. I think you kind of want a veteran at least coming out of the gate. You know, he kind of knows what to expect. He knows that there will be a significant increase in just the intensity of the football game and the speed of the game. And that's something that Manziel won't have been used to just because he's never been in a game before. You know, the only way that you get kind of that game experience in the NFL is by playing in real games, you know, not these preseason games, because let's be honest, I mean, most guys, you know, are they emptying the tank on every play? Probably not. It's a different football game. It's a different level. And I just think it's, you know, from the coaching staff's point of view, you can always go to Manziel. You know, if Hoyer is not doing well, you know, whether you bring Johnny in, I'm sure he'll have some sort of, you know, package that he'll come in and he'll run no matter, you know, if Hoyer's doing well or not. You know, they drafted this guy to play him and to utilize his talent, so I'm sure they have something that you probably haven't seen yet in the preseason.
Okay, we're going to step aside for a quick commercial break as we are going one-on-one with Jason Peter, our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We've got much more that we're going to get into. We're going to talk some RG3. And I got a couple more questions that I've got to ask Jason Peter about Johnny Manziel. You stick around. We will be right back with much, much more. We want to hear from you at Twitter, at eRadioSports, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are cruising through the fastest 2 hours in radio right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and I am Elissa Walker. Campbell. Remember, we want to hear from you. Join us online at Twitter at eRadioSports. And before we take our commercial break, of course, Jason Peter welcoming back in. Our discussion, of course, was about Johnny Manziel. And I just have to wonder, Jason, I mean, he's so young. You know, 5-10 years from now, I just really think he's going to look back on his career. I mean, he's just sabotaging himself with so many ridiculous things that he's doing. First, it was off the field. Now it's on the field. We were talking about earlier, this obscene gesture.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, this is the reality of the NFL. It's the reality of big-time college football. If you win, people, they have a tendency to forget about the dumb things that you do, whether it's off the field or on the field. I mean, if Bo Pelini here in Lincoln rips off, you know, 12, 13 wins this year, and has his team in the 14 playoffs, nobody's going to remember him, you know, at the end of the year last year against Iowa, taking his hat off and swinging it about, you know, half of an inch away from the referee's face. Winning cures everything, and it's no different in the NFL. And And if Johnny Manziel ends up going out there and taking the NFL by storm and becomes kind of the Michael Vick of 2015 and beyond, then people will just love him. And he'll sell jerseys and he'll sell all the memorabilia that goes along with it. And, you'll have, unfortunately, you'll have young kids, looking up to Johnny Manziel and wanting to be Johnny when they go in the backyard and they're playing 2-on-2 with, a couple kids from down the street. They're going to want to be Johnny Manziel. That's a whole nother conversation about whether or not players should be role models or not, but the reality is whether they should be or shouldn't be, they are. And it's just winning and playing well is the ultimate goal, I guess, in the NFL. Teams draft you. Sure, they want you to be a solid citizen, but they also want you to be able to move the ball down the football field. That's just the reality of the NFL.
Okay, so we've been talking about Manziel, his latest episode, and, of course, the quarterback competition. Brian Hoyer named the starting QB. So what did you take away from RG3? What are your thoughts on him? I mean, let's think back to last year. The Redskins, 3-13. They struggled mightily in 2013. What is Robert Griffin? What has he got to show you?
Yeah, he's got to bounce back. I mean, to kind of that rookie form. It was a disappointing year last year for him as an individual and as a team for the Redskins. They kind of were hoping to build off of that 2012 year where RG3 kind of came in, and he did. He kind of took the league by storm, and that was not an easy conference to do it in. That NFC East that year in 2012 was strong, The Redskins and Robert Griffin had some success, and then obviously the knee injury is big. You can't ignore that. Just because he was back out there on the field doesn't necessarily mean that you were going to get the same RG3 as the year before. But now he's got another year under his belt. The feeling with ACLs is, that second year is usually when guys start to feel comfortable on it or are comfortable on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think obviously with the coaching change there and Gruden, and it'll be interesting to see how or if at all, the way that they utilize RG3 is different than the way that Shanahan. I don't think it can be when you have a guy like that, who can spin the ball the way that he does as well as run, you take advantage of everything that he can give you.
Well, I know Redskins fans, they're certainly hoping that he will recapture the magic, as you just alluded to, from his rookie season. He's got to be able to show that he can read defenses and make a play with a new coach and with new schemes. So let's move ahead. Let's talk about the Big Ten Conference. Obviously, a huge blow for Ohio State with Braxton Miller going out with a season-ending injury. Kind of give us the pulse and sense from what you've been hearing out there. I mean, how good can Ohio State be without Miller?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They're going to go to a redshirt freshman by the name of JT Barrett, and he's another guy that can run as well as, throw, but no experience. So you don't really know exactly what you're going to get. The only thing that you know is that Urban has been pulling in top recruiting classes year after year after year, and this is the deal. When you lose a guy like Braxton, you're not gonna replace him. You're not gonna have the next guy in line. Most of the time, he's not gonna be as an accomplished a player. I mean, you're talking about the guy who's been the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year for the past 2 years, and you just kind of have to have everybody else pick up the pieces, pick up the slack. They got seven guys coming back on defense, and ultimately that would be the motto if it was somebody on my team, if we had lost our starting starting quarterback. Well, as a defense, you say, you know, it doesn't really matter how many points, you know, because we're not going to let anything in on us. And if teams can't score, they can't win. And, you know, everybody else just kind of has to pick up their game. But, you know, now from an offensive standpoint, you know, that line is going to have to pick it up again. You know, it's one thing when you have a guy like that, like Braxton, you know, when the offensive line, and this is not just maybe with Braxton Miller, this is with today's quarterback that can run, is that, you know, the errors that are made up front on that offensive line don't sometimes get as magnified because you have quarterbacks that can tuck the ball and can run even though a play may break down because a guy, you know, misses his blocking assignment up front. But that doesn't mean that, you know, guys can just miss their and not take care of their responsibilities up front. You know, I just think all the extra time that you can give JT Barrett and all the extra protection will only benefit, obviously, the offense. But, yeah, I know that there's a lot of teams in the Big Ten that are sleeping a little easier now knowing that Braxton Miller's not going to be playing this year.
We're quickly running out of time, but how much do your expectations now change with the Buckeyes?
It's got to change a little bit. You know, for anybody, if they had them winning the conference and still feeling, you know, that comfortable or that good about Ohio State winning the conference, you know, it's not realistic. I mean, it's taken away the impact and the significance that Braxton Miller has over the course of an Ohio State football game. And, you know, I think, fortunately, I just, you know, I don't think there's many great defenses in the Big Ten. You know, I like what Michigan State does. Occasionally Nebraska can play well. You know, it's not like you have to go and you have to play SEC-type defenses. So, you can get away with sometimes some average offense, you know, average offensive execution over the course of a game. But, yeah, I mean, you got to, I think, knock some points or take them away from Ohio State, you know, losing Braxton Miller. They certainly didn't get any stronger by losing him, but they definitely, you know, in my eyes, got a little weaker.
Thank you, Jason, so much for the time, okay?
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We'll continue on right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close. Join us online at Twitter, at E-Radio Sports, and we will be right back, as promised. Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back inside the Quicken Loans studios at Yahoo Sports Radio and the Big E Sports Show. As promised, it is time now to take our conversation to the hardwood for some NBA talk, some news and notes on the New York Knicks, and such an honor to have with us on this Friday night Basketball Hall of Famer, and perhaps the only guy who can rival Russell Westbrook or a Chris Paul as the NBA's best dressed. No one does it better than Walt Clyde Frazier, who I must share, I had the divine opportunity to meet this summer at the NBA Summer League out in Las Vegas, and it was such an honor to meet him. Good evening. It's nice to have you with us, Walt.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's get right to it, because what an offseason for the New York Knicks. I mean, there were a number of areas within the team and the organization that needed to be addressed, starting at the top. I mean, the Knicks were very aggressive. They hired a proven winner, a strong personality, and leader in Phil Jackson. This was a long time coming, his connection to the Knicks. Your thoughts on the impact that Phil has had with the organization, with the team, and getting the Knicks back into the conversation as a relevant team and positioning themselves to contend?
Well, obviously he brought credibility coming in with the championship rings, and we were happy to welcome him back home. I mean, he was my teammate early in the 70s when the Knicks won their two championships, so I don't think it could be a better matchup. The timing was exquisite. You know, Jackson has been away from the game. He needed a little rejuvenation, a new destination. And so we were all delighted that he chose the Knicks to try to turn it around.
You know, Walt, you bring up a great point, because I was going to say, what does that mean for you personally to reunite with a former teammate? I mean, he knows the expectations that the Knicks have. And as you were talking about, I mean, he was part of that championship team way back in 73.
Yeah. Well, you know, in New York, this is so demanding. The expectations are always there. So it's not like a newcomer coming in and not knowing the nuances of New York and what the people expect here. He knows he's been to the top. And so that means a lot as far as acquiring the players that he thinks can take this team back to their former Grand Tour.
Well, we want to talk about some of those offseason moves and the acquisitions, but obviously at the forefront and the big storyline was Carmelo Anthony and persuading Carmelo to stay with the Knicks. He signs that, what, five-year, $129 million deal, and he's got that renewed focus, that commitment that you got to give a lot of credit to Phil to keeping him right there in New York.
Yeah, plus Melo, I thought once he weighed all of his options, this was the place. I mean, the money was here, commitment to bringing in players to try to make this team a championship team. And it seems like he and his family like being in New York City. So I thought it was a good matchup. And obviously, we are delighted that Melo decided to return.
Knicks legend, basketball Hall of Famer Walt Clyde Frazier is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show, and I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We want to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. And one of the things I've loved hearing about with Carmelo, he's got this renewed focus, his commitment. When he posted a shot on Instagram on this low-carb diet, he's trimmed down. And if you're a Knicks fan, you have got to be really excited because he understands with the new system that Coach Fisher's bringing in, you got to be playing faster, right?
Well, I think last year he realized that he had to lead to the minutes scoring. I mean, the minutes played right there near the top, and scoring is very demanding. And you see what James has been able to accomplish by being in superb conditioning. So Melo dedicated himself. I thought last year was his best shape that I've seen him in. So, you know, he improved his rebounding. We mentioned the scoring. He improved his defense. So I thought those were the things that really galvanized him and wanted him to be in better shape coming into this season.
You know, I thought it was interesting, too. I was listening into one of your conversations that you had with Phil Jackson. It was one of the interviews. And Phil brought up some great points. He was talking about the importance of him coming on board to get these players to understand getting back to basics, understanding things fundamentally. Sometimes some of these players, you know, they're coming straight out of high school, whether it's AAU ball or, you know, just playing 1 year of college ball. Younger players need to master skills. They can't overlook any of those facets of the game. I mean, being fundamentally sound, that's paramount.
Yeah, because you have to start somewhere with the basics. We all started out learning to dribble, pass, and shoot, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my first game, I wasn't dribbling behind my back. We weren't shooting three-point shots.
Uh-huh.
So you got to go back to the basics whenever you're trying to improve or do something. Like whenever I was in a shooting slump, I always went back to basics. Face the basket. Don't shoot across your body. Elbows straight. Fingertips. So this is what Phil is trying to get these players to go back to basics, man, on the defense, see the ball, see it, man. These are the little things that make you into a champion. So they are really focusing on the basics of the game.
And, of course, you have got to be unified defensively. I mean, you've got to be able to be giving out 100% effort on the defensive end of the floor. We're not just talking about refining your offensive skill sets or not necessarily, you know, talking about, you know, coming down, head-hunting, setting good screens, but really you got to take care of business on the defensive end of the floor in order to be, as we're talking about, being a relevant team.
And it doesn't matter what sport. Look at football. What's the champion? Seattle. What was the catalyst? Defense.
That's right. You bet.
Look at the Spurs. What's they're the champion? What's the catalyst? Defense. Teamwork. So you can't get away from that. Everyone focuses on talent in the NBA, the big three, the big two, and all of this. But the essence of the game is still teamwork. You've got to have a team. You must play defense, and that hasn't changed in the 70s when we played. That's what our two championships were built upon: teamwork and exquisite defense.
You are listening to the voice of the great Walt Clyde Frazier, Knicks legend, basketball Hall of Famer. He is the television analyst for MSG Network, coverage of the New York Knicks. And it is interesting. You know, you just talked about even the Spurs. And with Phil Jackson, with Derek Fisher, now with the triangle offense, I mean, obviously there's perpetual motion. There's some similarities there in terms of how San Antonio ran things offensively and perhaps what you guys are going to be doing offensively as well, correct?
What we'll be trying to do. Whether that happens or not is another story. Obviously, Melo is the catalyst. He has to make it work. He has to be the guy that moves the ball and make it contagious for the other players. So if he doesn't do it, then it's not going to happen. So like he's dedicated himself to getting in superb conditioning, I think he also has to focus on that he has to be the guy to try to hit that open man, go out of his way to make it more of a team game.
Well, yeah, because you want everybody to touch the ball. You want to work it around the horn. And so the onus is not so much on Carmelo. When that fourth quarter rolls around, he's going to be fresh and ready, and he can make some of those game-winning shots.
Yeah, the operative word is trust, the word that they use today in the game. You got to trust your teammates. No one guy's going to do it. No two guys, no three guys are going to do it. Go ask Miami. You got to have a basic team concept in order to win and be a champion. So Melo has to realize that. So do the other Knicks players.
Okay, for the New York Knicks, the big trade that went down in the month of June, late June, was with the Mavericks and moving Tyson Chandler, Felton to Dallas in exchange for Jose Calderon, Samuel Dalembert, and Shane Larkin. So from some of those names that I just rattled off, I mean, who is the guy immediately that comes to your mind that could really step in and be that immediate difference maker?
Calderon. We had trouble in the backcourt. That's why Felton is gone. They weren't happy with his orchestration or his defensive prowess, so they wanted to change that up. So Calderon is a guy that is very shrewd, clever, slick. He can run an offense. He's a lethal three-point shooter. So I think he's the key guy in that trade. But, you know, you saw in the summer league, Larkin. I like Larkin. He's diminutive, 5'9", but very quick. And the Knicks need some quickness in their backcourt to go with Calderon and Prigioni. And he's a good defender, so I think he's also going to help our team. And Dalembert, of course, just a rebounder. He's not a guy that really scores, but the Knicks have lacked that tenacity, and I think that's why they gave up on Chandler. Chandler had been injured most of the last two seasons, wasn't the same defensive player, so Dalembert should fit into the system well.
Well, let me back up for a moment. Since you mentioned Shane Larkin, I mean, I certainly was impressed with his play out in summer league. But were you surprised how well offensively that the guys ran the triangle offense?
Somewhat, but I think it's the character of the players and the system that you come from that they blended well in the playoffs. But I also give credit to the Knicks coaches. I think they're really stressing the importance of that triangle offense, trying to get the players to buy into it. But essentially, we're creatures of habit. So if you look at our teams in the 70s, we personified teamwork. You can't mention Frazier without Bradley, without DeBusschere, without Reed, without Barnett. But if you look at the background of those players, other than Barnett, who was always a gunner, you know, he fit into that system. But the other players, for instance, high school, this is how I played the game. Hit the open man, move the ball, play defense, and Reed was the same way, DeBusschere, Bradley. So it was a little more easy for us to conform to that system. Whereas today's players, and I often talk to Oscar Robertson and some of the former greats, we think the players don't really work on the basic fundamentals of the game. So today the game is entertainment. You know, the focal point is the three-point shot and the dunk and the run and gun. This is what they want to play, how they want to play, because of ratings, because of the young people, because of the video games. So a lot of the emphasis of the game has kind of changed in that respect, and I think that's why the basics of the game now is not important as when we played the game in the 70s.
Well, that goes back to my earlier point in that interview that you had with Phil Jackson. Give me a hit on Tim Hardaway Jr., because what he's entering his second season with the Knicks, he's certainly impressed at Summer League, and I think that he's a really special player.
Yeah, he is, and he's as good a player as he is, he's a good person. So I give his dad kudos, Tim Hardaway Sr., the way he raised his son. He's very mannerable, polite. He's very coachable. What he has to improve, and if he does, if he improves his defense, the Knicks are not going to be able to keep him out of the starting lineup. He gives them quickness in transition, a guy that can finish. You know, he has those spectacular dunks once he gets out. He has a three ball. He makes big shots. He's not afraid of the big shots in the moment, so... like you, I think this kid is on the threshold of greatness.
Well, he was incredible. He averaged almost 23 points per game in Summer League. And the good news, if you're a Knicks fan, he is only 22 years of age. And you're talking about his daddy, just the wonderful influence that he's had. I have to tell you what, Walt, I enjoyed sitting next to and listening to his mom cheer on her son out there. I mean, she really gets into the game. Have you had a chance to spend some time with her?
No, I haven't. I usually just see Tim because I think he's scouting with the Heat.
Yeah.
So I normally run into him a lot, but not the mom.
My final question for you is just your impression of having Derek Fisher on board. A number of burning questions in terms of with that triangle offense, but just the impact that he's going to be able to have with this young roster.
Well, I must say I'm surprised that Phil, we talked about him understanding the nuances of New York, the culture, that he would bring in a rookie coach.
Mm-hmm.
It could be overwhelming. We saw what happened to Jason Kidd early on. They did not get off to an auspicious start, the criticism, and that's what Fisher is up against here, even though Phil is behind him, but Phil is not the coach. So he must really respect Fisher and what he can bring to the game. He's 17 years of experience as an NBA player. So, you know, I like his concept. I said during the summer league, I was very impressed with the organization of the Knicks coaches, how they organize the guys, how they galvanize the guys to fit into that system, to get them to play the triangle, move the ball, don't worry about scoring, be a defensive player, work on your weakness, whatever you can do to help this team thrive, this is what we want you to do. So, but again, you know, New York is a place that can overwhelm. We talked about the expectations and how people want to win. It's not enough to win in New York,
mm-hmm.
especially now with Phil Jackson. They want a championship. And that's what the focal point is here. And there's right now, I don't see them as a championship contender for another year or so. So Fisher's got to try to get the win the fans here. First of all, because everyone is sitting back waiting to see, just like with any rookie, like a rookie player, you've got to prove yourself. So this is where Fisher is now. We know about what he brings to the game, but now can he take his game to the next level as a coach?
You've been listening to the voice of Walt Clyde Frazier, ranked among the NBA's 50 all-time greatest players. He is beloved by millions of fans as one of the most colorful personalities to have ever graced the game. A two-time NBA champion, number 10. What an honor it is to have you with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Thank you so much, Walt. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Okay, good evening and welcome back to YSR, the Big E Sports Show, where we always deliver the biggest and the very best in sports. Right now, we're going to change things up a bit and shift gears. We're going to delve into a subject that is not always so easy to discuss. And I thought with us gearing up for a brand new season, obviously there's so much excitement for the start of the NFL, college football, a lot of speculation on, you know, the top teams, the players, their physical preparation in the offseason. But what about the athlete's mental preparation? I think many times that is viewed as secondary. And a big part of having success in achieving individual team goals is learning how to handle pressure, how to respond to adversity. We saw earlier this week with the Steelers, a couple of those guys getting busted, you know, for pot. So, you know, the mind, the body, it needs to be harmonious. So we have invited back on tonight's show a best-selling author who has shared his personal account, battle with dealing with eating disorders, with depression, with addiction. And that is the wonderful, always up in Dallas, Texas, Brian Cuban. How hot is it in Dallas, Brian?
Actually, we're having a cold, it's a cold front. It's like 97.
Oh, my gosh. It is absolutely stifling down here, and I am sweating tonight in studio. So just to kind of recap for all of our listeners tonight, you had recapped a best-selling book. It is titled Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. And just kind of, you know, give us a refresher on that as we start off our conversation, just an overview of your personal story and what you chronicled in this book.
Sure. Shattered Image basically chronicles my struggle with 27 years of bulimia, clinical depression, drug and alcohol addiction, and basically taking me to a near suicide attempt and how I was able to turn that around and recover and empower others to recover.
And one of the things that I didn't get into last time we had you on the show, that must have taken, Brian, so much energy and effort when we were talking about the eating disorder to keep that a secret, because you kept that a secret for many, many years.
It does take a lot of energy, and it's not uncommon. People with eating disorders and addictions also, you get a PhD, I like to say, in camouflage,
mm-hmm.
you know, in hiding it. And the reason is, it's like with a lot of mental illness, there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of stigma. You don't want people to think less of you than you already think of yourself. You're afraid of losing relationships, losing jobs, losing love. So you hide it and you put up a brick wall around it that unfortunately you know, well, it shields everyone from your pain. It keeps you from expressing your pain and therefore moving forward in recovery.
Well, there were so
that's a big part of recovery is able to release mm-hmm. that pain.
Mm-hmm. There were so many things that you covered in your book, you know, overcoming destructive behaviors. Pinpoint for us and for the listeners tonight, I mean, what was the key for you to get past that?
The key in getting past it, well, there were a couple big points, but the key in getting past it was really finally to stop blaming people and, you know, for what happened, you know, blaming my mother, blaming kids who bullied me, and learn how to forgive and learn how to let go of anger. And once I was able to forgive and let go of anger, then I was able to really start moving forward in recovery and educate myself. And once I was able to educate myself, I realized that it was no one's fault. You know, a lot of people have predispositions to a lot of these things. And as you know, as you talk about, you know, with the athletes and pressures, mm-hmm. the pressures of school, the pressures of work, you know, different things in life can trigger these behaviors. You know, no one chooses to have an eating disorder. No one chooses to be a drug addict. No one chooses to, you know, have depression that might take you so low where you feel you have no choice in a given moment but to take your life. Coming to realize that it is not about fault, it's about understanding how I got there was really the watershed moment in my recovery. And that took me hitting a low point. I mean, it mm-hmm. took me standing in the parking lot of a psychiatric facility for my second time.
We're talking with Brian Cuban, of course. His book that was released last year, it is titled Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. You know, as you share in the book, overcoming destructive behaviors, I mean, I think back to last week hearing that absolutely heartbreaking, devastating news about Robin Williams. You know, it really makes you stop and think. You never know what someone is going through, and we just need to have better awareness. I mean, and you share something.
You don't. And it seems, you know, I mean, awareness, I mean, awareness is a good term, but it's also a term that can get watered down. What does awareness mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does awareness mean that we all talk about the tragedy of Robin Williams' death for a cycle, a new cycle, and then it goes away? Does awareness mean that you need to stay involved in the lives of your loved ones, which is what saved my life?
Right.
Does awareness mean, you know, better mental health coverage? Does awareness mean better mental health resources and educating people on these things? Yeah, I mean, we have to be sure we put a context around awareness. Otherwise, it just becomes a term that causes news cycles to roll forward and everyone goes on to something else.
Best-selling author, activist, attorney Brian Cuban has been with us tonight at YSR. I want to encourage you to go out, and you can still get a copy of his book, Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. That, of course, was Brian Cuban, best-selling author. We want to say thank you to all of our guests in our lineup, Enos Cabell, Jason Peter, Lee Steinberg, the newest member of the Yahoo Sports Radio Network. Check out his new show, Monday nights from 8 to 10 Eastern, Jeff Garcia with Project Spurs, and Walt Clyde Frazier, giving you the best that we've got, always at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show.